This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows, and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Google has recently entered into the video game console with Stadia. Video game journalist Matt Cabral is going to join me to break down this upcoming console and to discuss other video game news. Thanks for joining me, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we begin, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a full-time freelance writer. I've been doing it about 14 years, I guess. I cover primarily video games, but also movies, TV, theme parks, toys, tech, anything kind of cool and geeky and pop culture stuff. I write for everyone from like IGN, Entertainment Weekly, StarWars.com, Hollywood Reporter. I've been doing it a long time, so I've had the pleasure of working with some great outlets and some great folks. So that's pretty much the gist of it.
So you're doing all kinds of tech stuff and video gaming. So you've already had a really big understanding of what it means to be a gamer. And I have to know, from your perspective, what do you think of Google Stadia?
You know, it looks impressive, looks exciting and promising. I hope they can pull it off. Was watching the coverage of it pretty intently because it does sound great. You know, they're talking about AAA games across all screens, you know, no downloading, no update, all this fantastic stuff, you know, 4K, HDR, 60 frames per second. It's all just a click away. Basically, the Netflix of games. It sounds fantastic. At the same time, though, you know, we had sort of been, you know, gamers have been burnt on this premise in the past a little bit. There was a company you might be familiar with called OnLive, who introduced a similar service a while back, about 10 years ago, I'd say. Actually, no, excuse me, it wasn't. That was when the company was formed. The service was more like 5 years ago. But they did, you know, they were claiming a lot of the same things, but it didn't quite succeed for a variety of reasons. So, you know, we'll kind of have to see what happens. But it certainly has potential.
That's true about the potential. I'm a little bit scared of it. I'm kind of concerned that Google's going to try to steal my information. Do you know if that's true or not, or I'm just being scared for no reason?
I haven't heard that specific concern about stealing information, but I know that's a concern that's on a lot of folks' minds these days. I know from the gamer perspective, it's not so much the security issue, but it's things like, you know, how sort of stable the service will be, you know, if there'll be any lag or, you know, will there be any server-side issues, how optimized will the bandwidth and the service be. You know, again, I use the term sort of this would be like Netflix for games, but, you know, Netflix subscribers are movie fans are much more forgiving. You know, if a gamer has a, you know, sort of a hiccup with a service like this and it results in them, I don't know, dying in a match of Call of Duty or Fortnite or whatever, they're not going to be happy. They're not going to be so forgiving. And something like that will immediately, you know, shine sort of a poor light on a surface like this.
I already know that since this is going to be a constant upload, there is going to be lag issues. So I'm going in already knowing that I'm going to die halfway before I get to a safe point.
Exactly, right? And I mean, for more casual gamers or even a lot of mainstream gamers, that's totally cool. That's fine. You know, either they won't be bothered by the lag if it's there, or, you know, even if they do notice it and they are bothered by it, it won't be a big deal. But, you know, they'll move on. But, you know, I don't know how many hardcore gamers you've dealt with in your career, but they're a pretty passionate and pretty serious group at times. And you know, if their game service is not working up to par the way they expect it, they, you know, they'll let it be known and they won't be happy.
Now, will Google only have third-party developers, or are they going to make any games themselves?
That's actually a great question because, you know, they are talking about some exclusive games, and that could be a really key factor there. You know, it's awesome that they're going to support the AAA stuff, you know, the third-party AAA stuff. But if they come out with, you know, sort of a killer Google exclusive, the equivalent of, you know, what Halo is to Xbox or God of War is to PlayStation, then something like that could make all the difference, you know? If they do even one really great game that gets a ton of positive buzz and really delivers, that could sort of, that could make or break them right there.
When it comes to Stadia, it's kind of been done before. So why would Google think that they can come into the gaming industry? I mean, you have Sony, Microsoft, especially Nintendo, the three juggernauts. Why even try to come into a market that's so closed?
I think it's because everybody sort of wants a piece of the pie. Gaming has emerged. You know, gaming has always been really big, going way back, but, you know, more recently, you know, a lot of these big tech companies are realizing just how big it is. They're seeing the success of things like, you know, Fortnite and the PlayStation 4, you know, selling like 90 million consoles. So, I mean, I think everybody wants a piece of it. And Google certainly has, you know, they've got the experience, the technology, the infrastructure. If somebody can make it happen, they're probably a good company to take a stab at it, you know, and be successful with it. And, you know, obviously take a big chunk of that pie from the other competitors.
Honestly, I was talking about this with my producer. I told her that I think that in the future, it'll be Google and Microsoft, because those are the only two companies with enough money to keep throwing onto bad projects. The other ones are just going to teeter off.
Yeah, you make a good point there. I mean, if you're talking about the money, I mean, Google certainly has it to spare, and they can, you know, I would assume they can even afford to maybe not come out of the gate really strong, but, you know, if they have a problem, throw money at it and fix it and, you know, get things where they need to be. I do think it's a little bit, you know, bold of them to sort of, I know one of their taglines for the whole Stadia thing is saying the future of gaming is not a box. Which, you know, to me, I could be wrong, but to me, that's sort of a dig. You know, it's Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo, the console makers. I think that's a bold statement on their part, you know, rather than sort of being satisfied to sort of coexist with them. It seems like they're kind of maybe going after them a little bit and want to take them down. So I'm not sure what their thinking is there.
Honestly, I think they're going after PCs too, going after the PC master race there. And, you know, everybody says PC is supposed to be the best thing ever, but, you know, Google's kind of saying you don't need a box for anything. You could use, you know, a little plug and play. And it's, I don't know. I don't like it personally. I like having a physical copy of any game. What about you?
Yep, I'm exactly the same way. I love, you know, I'm a little bit older. I'm 47 years old. So I enjoy my physical media, movies, books. I still listen to CDs, and I like having my physical video games. And I think a lot of gamers like that, even younger gamers. You look at something like the Nintendo Switch, which is hugely popular. It's not the most powerful or innovative system, but it's just a really sort of cool piece of hardware, and people love having it. You know, they love having that physical thing. They love having the sort of, you know, again, different sort of clever piece of hardware that they can play at home, they can take with them. It's not necessarily about, you know, having the best looking games or the biggest games, but the fact that you can have them on this cool console, play them anywhere. And of course, you know, Nintendo, not to get off the subject, but Nintendo also has the great first party releases, you know, the Marios and the Zeldas and the Metroids, which goes back a little bit to what we were saying. If Google has an exclusive title, it's sometimes more about the, you know, the content and the quality of the content than the actual service delivering it.
Now, I have been looking forward to two games that have recently came out, Devil May Cry 5 especially. Did you play this one yet?
I have. I haven't completed it yet, but I'm about halfway through. It's great. I don't know if you played any of the previous games in the series, but it sort of, you know, it sort of brings back what was awesome about those games, but in sort of a much, much more polished and prettier take. You know, it's like the sort of the next gen version of Devil May Cry. Hey, have you played the other games?
I have played the other games, and I'm going to tell you, I'm extremely confused. Did I just not pay like attention enough?
Are you talking about the story or the gameplay or
the
both?
Story? I mean, didn't they do a reboot? What happened here?
Yeah, I'm right with you there. Honestly, I love the new game, but I gave up on the Devil May Cry story many years ago. It's a little bit all over the place. It's a little bit convoluted. You got to be, I don't know, you got to be a really serious sort of hardcore fan of the series, I think, to follow it. But, you know, the gameplay is so awesome and so cool and just like fast and stylish and just, it's just crazy. It's really good gameplay. So I can totally, you know, enjoy the game and not worry about the story, which is fine for me. I think that's the case with, you know, with a lot of players. And you mentioned the reboot. They did do one called DMC a few years back that Ninja Theory put out, which sort of tried to reboot the series. And that was really good as well. I know some of the purist fans didn't love it because it did some different things, but that was a great game as well.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot about the DMC. Nobody wants to talk about it. That is like the thing in the corner that nobody wants to look at. That poor game.
I know, right? And I don't get it. I actually revisited it recently in some preparation of things I was writing about the new release. And I checked it out, and I'm like, wow, this is a great game. And it still holds up after all these years. you know, again, going back to some of the stuff we were talking about with the Stadia, is that gamers, you know, especially long-time hardcore gamers, they're just a really passionate audience. And if, for whatever reason, if they don't like something, you're going to hear about it, you know?
With Devil May Cry 5, though, did you hear about it having multiple endings? I wasn't sure about that because I haven't finished it either.
Yeah, I've heard there is more than one ending. I haven't reached those either, so I couldn't really speak too much about that stuff. But yeah, there are different endings, and if you've been playing it, you probably know there's, you know, you play as three different characters, which is, you know, pretty cool depending on who your favorite is. Have you had a chance to try all the characters in the game?
No, not all the characters. I try to complete as much as I can with one, and then I switch it. I don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know why. I feel like I'm like a bit of a completist. You have to finish one thing first before you open up a new chapter.
No, I'm totally with you there. I was totally like that before I had kids, and now I've got two young ones, and my time is just, you know, I don't have the time I used to. So it kind of kills me because I want to be a completionist and I want to get every collectible and see every, you know, every corner at every level, but I just got to kind of, you know, time management and, you know, just go faster than I'd like to, I guess.
Yeah, that does happen. When my niece and nephew are over, it's like, oh, geez, I have to give them the broken controller because they want to play.
Yes, I hear you. My young son, he's 6 years old, and he wants to play everything, and he sees me playing these games, and, you know, as you know, they're not all appropriate for every age. So I've got to kind of explain that to him.
Oh, that was something.
Which isn't easy. Yeah.
Do you know with Devil May Cry, do you know if there's going to be any DLC?
I don't know the specifics on it, but I think they are supporting it post-launch with some DLC. The response to the game has been great, which I think was a little bit of a surprise to some folks. You know, Capcom's kind of been on a roll. They had, I don't know if you're familiar with the Resident Evil series, but they had Resident Evil 2 Remake earlier in the year, which was awesome. They also had Monster Hunter World the year before, which was excellent. So they've kind of been on a roll. Devil May Cry, you know, of those games, was sort of the one that was a little bit under the radar and not hyped up as much. So when it came out and it was, you know, as good as it was and the reviews were so great, I think people were, you know, again, a little bit surprised by it. So they were already planning DLC for it. But, you know, given the response to the game, I think they're even more like, you know, not only let's get on the DLC, but also let's think of the future of the franchise in the next game.
Yeah, Capcom's been having, like, they've been knocking them out of the park. Was it the Resident Evil remake, the Resident Evil, what was it, 8, 7? I forgot. The one with the hillbillies.
Oh, my God, that one was so good. That was my favorite game of that year. Yeah, Resident Evil 7.
Yes, it was 7.
Yeah, fantastic. And that had some great DLC as well. Yeah, and then they did Resident Evil 2, which was amazing.
It was beautiful. I love that game.
Yeah. And, you know, before long, they hadn't officially really spoken about it yet. But obviously, Resident Evil 8 will be on the horizon somewhere soon as well.
Of course, you got to keep pumping them out. Those are the, you know, home runs right there.
No, you're right. And again, talking about those hardcore gamers again, they're tough to please and they can be impatient too. You know, you can come out with a fantastic game like Resident Evil 2 or Devil May Cry 5 and, you know, the really passionate fans play through that in a weekend or less and they're already asking when the next one's coming out, you know.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't ask that. Do you know how long this game is? Like, is it a 16-hour game for Devil May Cry 5?
I think it's about a 15-hour playthrough, yeah. I want to say I'm about halfway through, and I've played about 10 hours. So I think maybe 15 to 20, depending. Again, you know, you said you're a completionist, so if you're looking for all the collectibles, and I know there's, God, I forget what you call them, but there's basically, like, bonus missions that you can unlock within the levels. If you're going for all that stuff, I think you're probably looking more on the higher end of that, maybe closer to 20 hours.
Now, that's still kind of short, but still, if they're coming out with DLCs, that's going to be really nice.
Yeah, it should keep fans happy for a while, and with E3 coming up in June, maybe, you know, Capcom will have an announcement, not for the next Devil May Cry, but maybe Resident Evil or something else.
Now, the other game I wanted to talk about was Sekiro's Shadows Die Twice. I was really looking forward to this game, and I've only played a little bit, so it's okay if you spoil it. I don't mind.
No, that's all right. You've probably played more than me. I checked it out at some, you know, at a media event. I played a preview of it, and I, you know, played it more recently with the release, but, you know, how do I say it nicely? It's it's a fun game, but it's brutally difficult, which is intentional. But for me personally, and again, this goes back to having kids and not as much time as I did when I was younger, I don't have the patience I once had for games like that. It's a beautiful game. It's gorgeous, and it plays really well, and it's super polished, but it is pretty punishing if you've played it or if you're familiar with any of the other games from that developer, from Software, the Dark Souls games and Bloodborne. They are intentionally brutal.
Yeah, and it's funny. I think of the game kind of plays a little bit like Dark Souls, Bloodborne, or Demon Souls, you know, the old one. But it's kind of weird. They don't like that you compare it to that game. So I have a hard time comparing this game to anything else. It's just hard then, right?
Yeah, me too. I mean, you know, when it came out, well, even before it came out, a lot of the, you know, pre-release buzz was that it was obviously the next game from Software. The developer of Dark Souls, Demon Souls, and the Bloodborne game. So everybody was expecting sort of the next sort of take on this player punishing genre from that developer. And it delivered that, but I guess it's doing a lot of things differently. I haven't experienced it personally because it's so damn hard that I haven't gotten that far. But I guess it's doing, you know, I guess the story is more focused. You know, the previous games from Software were sort of mysterious, where this one, I guess it's got a much more focused story. Apparently there's some cool stealth elements in it, which the other games didn't really have. So it does sound different. Even the combat, which is, again, supposed to be brutally difficult. You know, folks are saying it's even harder than the Souls games. But at the same time, they're saying it's totally different. So it's hard, but in a totally new way. To the point where they're saying, what I've heard is, it can actually work against you if you're, you know, if you're good at their other games, if you're good at the Dark Souls games and you're good at Bloodborne, that, you know, you shouldn't bring the skills from those games into Sekiro because it's going to kind of work against you because it's offering something new and you kind of have to basically relearn, you know, reteach yourself the combat.
Yeah, they kind of focus a little bit on the stealth and you can actually plan out your attacks, which is kind of nice versus with Dark Souls, you just had to parry everything. And once you learn to parry, you can kill anything. It didn't even matter. Parry, strife to the left or right, get behind somebody, and boom, you know, they're dead. But in this game, it's a little bit more elegant, I guess you have to be. But it's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I've heard, and that's what I've experienced from the time that I've played it, is, you know, you can do a little bit more of sort of planning and plotting, and it's got, I guess you'd call it maybe a more deliberate pace, and that you can sort of take that stealth approach and think about what you're going to do. But I'll tell you, once you get into combat, for me anyway, I'm still getting my butt kicked a few minutes in, no matter how much planning I do. It is really good. I mean, like I said, I don't have the time like I used to play games like that, but I do want to dig into it a little bit deeper. I can certainly appreciate, you know, where the fans of these games are coming from. They're really good, but they are also for a very sort of specific, you know, niche audience.
And that is true, which I'm kind of surprised they did a little bit of story here because, you know, when it comes to Demon's Soul and Bloodborne, it had story. And Dark Souls, to me, never had story. I don't care what anybody says. I'm not taking the time out to read all the items, but it had no story.
No, I agree with you there. I mean, if you wanted to find the story, then you basically had to go online and read other people's interpretations,
right?
Of the story.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't have time for that. It's non-canonical. No. Get out of here. Unless it's written by somebody from FromSoft. I'm not listening.
I hear that totally. For that reason alone, because I'm, you know, my favorite types of games are single player, story driven games, you know, great characters, great, like, enemy encounters. So I do want to dig into it deeper just to sort of get that side of it. I wish I wasn't getting my ass kicked so badly on the way to sort of learning that stuff.
It's hard. I'm not going to lie. The first time I played was with Demon's Souls when Atlas made it. And
yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing. I think I turned the game off as soon as I turned it on. Like, what is this? And then when they became Dark Souls, I was like, okay, I'm trying again. And I finally got out of the main room, and it was fun.
Oh, okay, nice. Now, how'd you do with Bloodborne? Did you like that one?
You know what? I didn't like it because I realized halfway through it that there was kind of a story, and that made me upset. I was like, there's a story, and I'm missing it? Like, what's happening here? This isn't like Dark Souls at all.
So you were assuming there wasn't a story, so you just weren't paying attention, and then when you realized there was a story...
Exactly. I was like, I was supposed to save the little girl and do all this stuff. I'm like, I'm not starting over. I was like, that's it. I'm done with this game.
I hear you. Yeah, you know, I wish I've been to demos of these games, you know, at E3 and stuff. And I actually asked the developers, I'm like, you know, why don't you put in like an easy mode in this game just so people can experience the story and enjoy the story for more casual gamers? And they're just not having it, though. You know, they're like, if that's what you want, then this game isn't for you.
No, I love this game. This is exactly the amount of difficulty that I like, because I'm the type of person that can spend, you know, 90 hours on a role-playing game. So this is...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is nothing. I always come back to, especially Dark Souls 2. That was my favorite one. But okay. I can jump back and forth into that game and just keep just pouring hours into it. No problem. It's like Skyrim. I do the same thing with Skyrim. I've been playing that since it's on PlayStation 2. It's horrible.
Right, I know. And it's like on so many platforms now, you can just like play it over and over again.
Right. And it's still a new experience. How is that happening? I don't know.
Have you tried it in VR yet?
I have, but VR makes me sick. After a while, I'm like, I can't keep killing people with this on. The headshots are not working.
Yeah, it can be tough. It's definitely better in, you know, I guess smaller doses rather than playing for like 10, 15 hours straight. But it is cool. If your stomach can handle it, it's cool.
No, you're right. If you do this for 15, 20 minutes, that's the limit. But if you try to go for anything more than that, you're in for a bad time. That's a bad time.
Totally. I hear you.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter. I am at GameGoat. And, you know, like I said, I write for a bunch of different outlets, always covering games, always attending events like X and GDC and E3 and such. And I'm always posting my articles up there. So I'm kind of all over the place. But Twitter, is for sure the best place to follow me and find me.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.